This is a private visit, I take it to the realm, I mean?
Oh, yes, at least, as private as one can make it, and that's not easy, as you know.
This is splendid news, Omar. I need not say how grateful we are, and especially am I happy on account of our youngster, here. We exchanged a few more pleasantries, and Omar and his companion took their departure.
Roger, I said, this is something I never expected would happen so soon, though, in truth, one never knows.
Who is this personage that's coming? He inquired.
Do you remember you once asked us if we knew how old the spirit world is, and that we told you about one being, at least, who was in existence himself before the earth was? You remember, of course. Well, it is he who is coming, and incidentally, it is he who is the ruler of all the realms of the spirit world, that I spoke about only a moment ago.
You know, Roger, there are folk on earth who believe that the beings of the highest realms never by any chance leave those realms, because it would be too appallingly distasteful for them to leave the rarefied state in which they live. That is absolutely wrong. Those marvelous beings can, and do, journey into the different realms. It sometimes transpires that an individual may be speaking to one such personage and be totally unaware of it.
Who is this being? Roger asked again. Surely not. I know what you were going to say, my boy.
No. He is not the father of the universe, though one can understand the inference you might be tempted to draw even from the little we have told you.
He is known by sight, Roger, to every single soul living in the realms of light. How many thousands there are who name him as their beloved master, and that includes Omar himself, it is impossible to say. He exercises over all the realms the function that the individual ruler exercises over the realm to which he is appointed. He unifies the whole of the realms of the spirit world into one gigantic universe, over which reigns the father of us all. You cannot have the remotest conception, my Roger, of the magnitude, the immensity of the powers possessed by him. And yet, with it all, he is the most gracious being it is possible to contemplate. His position is one of absolute reality, if one can so term it, while he himself is indescribable. You will be able to judge for yourself, very soon, the enormous degree of knowledge, spirituality and wisdom he possesses. The colors denoting these three attributes are blue, white, and gold, and he has them upon his robe in enormous proportions. You saw for yourself how Omar has these three colors in no inconsiderable degree himself. Even so, there is this still greater. This is a little frightening, Monsignor, to put it mildly. I was rather used to taking a back seat when I was on Earth, and this looks like another occasion when it might be advisable to do it again. In other words, bolt before your visitor arrives.
No, 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 Roger. Stay, stay, you must. At any rate, I might be in the way.
Oh, come, Roger, my dear, interposed Ruth, you've stayed with us so far, and our advice has been good, though I do say so. We had got thus far in our deliberations when we perceived two old friends walking across the grass, for we had remained out of doors after the departure of Omar and the Egyptian. The present callers were none other than Franz Joseph and Peter Litch. Cordial greetings were exchanged, and we hastened to tell them of Omar's visit and its purpose.
Of course, you will both remain? I concluded.
My dear friend, said Franz, you would have some difficulty in trying to dislodge either of us.
Roger feels a little nervous, I told them.
Dear me, said Peter, that won't do.
Still, I can understand.
Now I'll tell you what to do, Roger. Wait until he comes, and then if you feel stage fright coming over you, well, you know the method of quickly removing yourself.
But you won't. The minute you see this visitor, you will want to stay.
That's how Franz and I felt on our first occasion of seeing him. We have seen him many times since, and spoken with him. We have so much to be thankful for, as it is from his high realm that the arts derive their inspiration, even to reaching as far as the earth. Many of us, since we came here, have had the opportunity to acknowledge and be grateful for what was given to us in those days on earth. Isn't that so, Franz, old friend?
Indeed, it is. We little knew on earth whence our ideas were coming.
Ruth, meanwhile, had placed a rather handsome armchair in the main room, a task that she always insisted upon assuming to herself upon all such occasions. As we assembled before the house, we could perceive a distinct brightening of the light upon the outskirts of our small estate, and we knew this for an unmistakable sign that our visitors were near. We therefore walked down the wide path that is flanked by broad beds crammed with flowers of many colors, and which led directly from the house towards where we should meet our visitors. Another moment, and we saw them approaching. Our guest was walking with Omar and the Egyptian upon either side of him, the latter carrying a large bouquet of superb white roses. This, as we discovered later, was composed of a number of small bouquets. Omar was the first to speak. "Well, my dear friends," said he, "we meet again, and France is here, and Peter. That is well." Our visitor took the hands of each of us, and spoke a word of kindly greeting. France and Peter had each taken an arm of Roger to give him assurance, and the picture presented by this action at once amused our visitor, for it chanced that our two friends had taken a somewhat firm hold upon Roger's arms. "What is this, my children?" he laughed. "You look to be holding the boy to prevent his escape from us." Ruth explained that Roger was a little nervous, since his experience was so far rather limited. "Come, now, Roger, my child," he said, "what is there to fear? Would you be fearful of me? Give me your hand so. Now banish hence all fears, never to return." It sounds like an incantation, doesn't it? Roger's confidence was restored immediately, and he was himself once more. "I think it will be safe now to release your prisoner, Peter and France." The two appeared somewhat confused because neither of them had realized, nor had Roger, that they were still linked in arms. The rest of us enjoyed this little episode, trifling enough in itself, but filled with kindness and humanity, and revealing, as clearly as the noonday sun, that even the highest personages from the highest realms of the spirit world are not impossible beings, grim and forbidding, humorless and unsmiling, but that they breathe forth the very essence of all that is warm-hearted and human. Roger never for an instant took his eyes from our illustrious guest, who was habited as he usually is upon such visits, that is to say, in a gossamer-like white robe, bordered with a deep band of gold, over which he wore a rich cloak or mantle of brilliant blue, fastened by a great pink pearl. His hair was golden, though when this is seen in the high realm where he lives, the golden hue becomes golden light. What seemed to attract Roger most of all was the countenance of our visitor, for following upon what we had told him of his immense age, as measured in earthly time, and running into millions of years, yet could Roger perceive no signs of the passage of time. Yet most assuredly when he spoke to Roger, the latter knew that there stretched behind him eons of time, while he presented the outward appearance of eternal youthfulness. At length we repaired indoors, our guest seated himself in the special armchair, while we occupied a half circle round him seated also, I need hardly add, for upon all occasions we behave like rational human beings. Our guest spoke to each of us in turn, and here again, lest I should be misunderstood, let me hasten to affirm that our conversation was also upon rational lines. We were most certainly not like a group of school children being submitted to an awful inquisition by some bloodless inspector. We were free to speak when we wished, subject to the demands of ordinary good manners. And what is most important, we had many an occasion for laughter and we laughed. No conversation could possibly be without humor where Omaya is present, and he was capably aided and abetted both by France and Peter. Roger marveled greatly at their apparent boldness, but he soon learned that did he wish to express his own thoughts upon any subject, he was expected to do so. Our guest thanked the two composers for all their work, as well as that of their colleagues, and assured them of his ever-continued help and inspiration. It was interesting and to Roger a revelation, another among so many, to hear the three discussing a number of musical technicalities with lively vigor. At last he spoke directly to Roger about his future, and astonished the boy by displaying much interest in, and especially knowledge of, his affairs. "Information reaches me from many quarters," he said. "It was Omar who told me, and Monsignor who told Omar, that you have shown a keen interest in the creation of flowers. Roger explained how we had visited the nursery gardener, who had cordially invited him to join his pupils whenever he wished. "That is good, my son. As you have seen for yourself, there is an abundance of useful things for you to do, the doing which will bring great happiness to yourself, and provide in your progress an advancement through the realms of this world. You will have seen, too, my son, how we all perform our different tasks for the general welfare without thought personal reward. Yet the rewards come nonetheless, lavish rewards, and so you will discover for yourself. Whenever you feel so disposed, the work awaits you. That is not to say you must curtail your present explorations. No one in these or other realms would wish, nor indeed would they have the right, to put a definite term upon your desires for knowledge gained at first hand in this way. But there does come a time when the activity of the mind is such that there is a compelling wish to be doing something active rather than to be a mere witness passively, as it were, to what is going on around you. You will never want for wise and willing friends to help you in whatever way you need. You have already in this brief period, gathered friends about you, from whom nothing can separate you, for you now live in a world where no such separation can take place. We are always here, even as you are. If you wish to study music, or follow any of the other arts, we can promise you such teachers as the earth can't provide, for here we have the masters, the real masters, two of whom, I am happy to see, are with us here. Then, Roger, my son, take up your new work when the inclination comes upon you, with the full knowledge that the work performed in this world is never wasted effort. Now, my friends, the time has come for us to leave. Before doing so, I would like to leave a little memento of our visit." Here the Egyptian passed into his hands the bouquet roses. "Accept these, my friends, with my love and blessings. Perhaps, Roger, you will help to create some roses as lovely as these. Remember me when you do so, and you shall have my thoughts, for the white rose is my favorite flower. Our friends here have seen them flourishing in my own gardens. I think, Omar," he concluded, "we will return at once. And so, my dear children, the blessings of the Father upon you, and my love remain with you." So saying, our guests took their departure. "Well, Roger, my dear fellow," I said, after a moment had elapsed, "aren't you glad you stayed? Aren't you glad we didn't let you get away?" said Peter and Franz together. But Roger was unable to come to Earth for a while. When he did, he was sufficiently wild with excitement to take us each in turn and waltz us round the room. Both Franz and Peter, being equally elated, seated themselves at the piano, where they instantly played a duet with great zest, while Ruth and Roger continued to dance throughout the apartment. At length, we became a little less boisterous, though the feeling of elation is such on these occasions that some form of outlet becomes a positive necessity. What we had enjoyed was no spiritual experience, such as the religiously minded on earth might consider it to be. An overwhelming experience, it would be foolish to deny, and its spiritual value it would be equally foolish to ignore. But the emotions we felt were deliriously bright, cheerful, happy, exhilarating emotions, never pious or sanctimonious, nor so awe-inspiring as to leave us bereft of all sense of complete enjoyment, for the latter is what was intended by the visit, and not something done solely for the good of our immortal souls. Those same immortal souls would derive superabundant benefit in a natural way, without overlaying it with unnatural, impossible religiosity. Hence, then, our exuberance of spirits, in more than one, and hence, also, the way in which we demons it, and were completely unashamed in the doing thereof. We continued to talk for some long while after our visitors had left, and we discussed with Roger his expressed wish to begin work with the gardener. Between times he could pursue his explorations on allocations as he felt inclined. We assured him that were Ruth or I engaged upon our own work at such periods, would not lack cicerone to take our places. Indeed, both and Peter offered to deputize for us whenever required. Nothing therefore remained to be done but to apprise our gardener friend of the advent of a new pupil. This was once put in hand in a simple fashion by our setting out in for the nursery, where a great welcome was accorded, together with many assurances that in a brief space he soon learned to create many beautiful flowers in general, and white roses in particular, which was now his one, overpowering desire. Epilogue. Our rambles and visits were temporarily halted when Roger became a student at the nursery garden, and at first we saw little of him. He quickly gained proficiency, as two fine white rose trees, standing one on each side of the wide path before our house, give eloquent testimony. Thereafter he relaxed his studies somewhat, and we were able to foregather more often, subject to the exigencies of our own work. He has established a study for himself upon the upper floor of our home, replete with technical volumes, where, at the present moment, he is engaged upon a close study of a particularly intricate floral formation. He is also occupied upon some horticultural plans based upon careful measurements which he took of our own small domain, from which Ruth and I deduce that the gardens round about our home will in due season undergo considerable alteration and rearrangement, an achievement to which we look forward with pleasurable anticipation. The friends he has made have derived benefit in numerous ways from Roger's newly acquired skill. Radiant Wing reports that a quantity of the most colorful and perfectly formed flowers are now enhancing his own gardens, and several suggestions made by Roger have been carried out with eminent success, within the gardens themselves, to the great satisfaction of their owner. Both Franz Joseph and Peter Lidge are in constant receipt of exquisite posies and bouquets of flowers for the further adornment of their respective homes, while Peter avers that the grounds around his house in the forest have lately come beneath Roger's speculative eye, and to his manifest delight Peter has invited him to accept carte blanche in carrying whatever improvements he wishes to make. Our friend who lives in the cottage has not been neglected, and Roger is a frequent visitor there, the two having become fast friends. I would like to make it perfectly clear, lest misunderstanding should arise, that our young friend Roger, the brief chronicle of whose life so far in these lands of the spirit world, subject of these writings, is no imaginary person, created merely as a character upon whom to hang certain spiritual facts. He is a real person whose passing and immediately subsequent story are precisely as here recounted. That story, excessively simple one, such as could be narrated of countless thousands of other young folk, of either sex, as well as of people. It is in no way exceptional or unusual, and although Roger could be said to typify numberless others, nonetheless he is Roger, a young man of great charm, and of whom grow increasingly fond. His merry pranks and lightness heart are our constant joy, while behind his gaiety a kindliness, a firm determination, and a mind capable of thought. He is equally at home with those who can count many years to their age as he is with the very young, for on numerous occasions he has accompanied Ruth and myself to the children's realm, where Ruth is always looked for eagerly both for herself and her musical accomplishments, and I have gained some small reputation as a storyteller. Here, in this enchanting region, Roger is in his element among the little ones. Such is the lad's enthusiasm for his work that he deems it his duty to entice Ruth and me into taking up the study of floriculture, in addition to our other occupations. Should succeed in his efforts, we shall insist that Roger himself takes us as his pupils and teaches us the art of which he is now such a capable exponent. One last word remains. It is almost inevitable that the charge will be made that the modest experiences and the mild conversation that have been here recorded are so inconsiderable as to be of little moment in the great spiritual scheme of life hereafter, and that upon all occasions only matters of the highest importance and greatest application would ever be considered by discarnate beings. The spirit world is at all times a place where human beings can live in such comfort and happiness as they were meant to do from the beginning. We do not, therefore, spend our eternity in constant prayer and praise, because that, as a mode of life, would be no life at all, not even mere existence. We do not occupy our time or waste it in profound theological discussions upon obscure theories, nor upon the more commonplace ones, for the simple reason that we have something much better to do, in every way more profitable, and infinitely more entertaining and enjoyable. Our conversation is at all times rational, natural, and normal. We do not speak to one another in terms of religious texts and scriptural quotations, nor are we endowed with wide knowledge and keen intellectual perception the instant we set foot in the spirit world at our dissolution. We are deeply thankful that we are ourselves, and not as others would have us to be. And so to conclude, the friends who have passed before you in these pages have begged to conjoin themselves with me as I say to you, Benedicat te omnipotens Deus.